my pleasure to welcome you to the Clark Howard Show, where it's about you and that wallet of yours. I want you to learn ideas from me so you can keep more of what you make. Coming up in just a few minutes, today's Clarkrageous moment, two more nasty data breaches just because of carelessness. And later, when you go buy groceries, how do you decide whether you're going to buy organics or regular groceries? And how much more are they costing you? I'm going to fill you in and what you need to know about things being labeled as organic. I alluded the other day to the possibility that we are headed towards a recession in the United States. And the reality is, nobody really knows if we are headed towards a recession. There are a number of warning lights flashing that the economy here and in many other places in the world is absolutely headed in a slowdown. But there's a difference between a slowdown and having sluggish growth versus having a recession, which is where economic activity actually declines. The number of people working declines. And I am unconvinced at this time, just based on everything I read, whether the economists being worried about a recession is in fact a reality. So let me tell you what I do see. Stock markets have been falling here and overseas, and they've been falling because of the fact that it looks like companies are going to report smaller profits moving forward than originally guesstimated. Smaller profits, not that companies are going to be falling off a cliff. We've had very strong job growth in the United States for now 7 years running. And the employment reports in the United States have been really, really good. A lot of people who had given up looking for jobs years ago now are surprised if they go out and look the opportunities that are available. So it's, I know there's a lot of worry because of everything that went wrong last decade, but it's a mistake to take the fact that we had this horrific Great Recession last decade and say, oh, well, the good news is over. Things are going to fall apart again. There were unusual factors that led to the horrific Great Recession, and it was because of the banking scandals. When you have a recession because of the kind of criminal behavior by the banks, recovery from one is much more difficult than a normal recession, which is a normal cycle in an economy. There are tools to deal with it. But as of right now, I see that we're going to have a likelier glide path of slower economic growth. And it means that maybe the great job openings we've had the last 7 years aren't as likely to be there moving forward. That the pay raises that we've been able to get, particularly if we're willing to be a free agent and go look for new opportunities, may not be as generous going forward. On the other hand, businesses are going to find it tougher to raise prices because the economy will not be as strong maybe as it has been lately. But there's a big difference between that and having a terrible time. I mean, there could be things happen that I don't recognize or realize. But what it does mean for you is that when you're looking at making major purchases that would have you taking on more debt, that is where you need to be cautious and careful. That doing things that are big splurges that you can afford to pay for out of the money you have, I don't see why that would necessarily need to change based on the economic indicators. But committing yourself to higher levels of debt would be a terrible mistake at a time that the economy is slowing, and it could potentially tip towards a recession. There are particular economic conditions going on right now that only twice in the modern era have not led to a recession. And that's why economists are buzzing more about it and people on Wall Street are more concerned about it. But I think we may dodge that. But at the same time, I want you to be careful what you do in your own life. And I want you to not put yourself in a position where you're more vulnerable if, in fact, a recession does materialize. Chris is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hello, Chris.
How are you doing?
Great. Thank you, Chris. You have a question for me that is almost impossible to answer, but let's see what I can do.
Great. I'm glad I could challenge you. So I'm trying to find a financial calculator that will factor in investments like my Roth and a 403B plus our pension that we've been building on through the state. And I can't find one.
Yeah, you'll find calculators that will do a very good job of taking the money you contribute to investment accounts and retirement plans and be able to figure out what that will generate for you at a future date in retirement based on best guesstimate. And that's not hard. The pension part of it, that's the hard part, because I've not seen anything that takes the X factor of a pension and does that. So it's almost like manually you have to figure out based on, and you should be able to be provided that by your pension plan, if you have so many years of service, what your likely monthly pension benefit will be at your targeted date of retirement. Can they do that for you?
Yes, they do. And they give you all the five options and they get pretty close. It's just, I wish I could factor that into our Roth investments as well.
So you don't really have to, you know, when you start trying to figure out what your cash flow is going to be, are you opted out of Social Security or will you also receive Social Security?
We'll also receive it.
Okay. So see, that's the other X factor. And so often you have to think about the fact you've got the pension, you've got Social Security. Social Security in the annual statement will provide you with an estimate, a guesstimate of what that will be worth per month. And so you can figure out that much. What you really do otherwise is you use one of the calculators, and all the big companies offer calculators. I like the one that Vanguard does just because I spend so much time on Vanguard's website, but Fidelity has a very good one. And you're able to put in just the simple inputs, how old you are, you move this thing around, what age you expect to retire, how much you make, how much you save each year, how much you've saved already. And then it will help you figure out based on likely annual returns moving forward, which I would put somewhere, if you're very heavily in a stock portfolio, somewhere like 5 to 6%.
Okay.
Maybe 5.5% would be a good compromise number.
All right.
And then you'll see how much income that'll generate for you down the road.
All right. Well, I appreciate it.
So the problem you named is why people go to a fee-only financial planner.
Right. And I thought that might be your answer, is a one-time financial planner to sit down.
Yeah. I mean, you could go to a Garrett Planning Network person, you know, who you can pay just a one-time fee and have them look over what you're doing, issue a report card to you, essentially, and tell you what you need to do to reach your target of comfort and retirement.
Right. Well, thank you.
Sure. And I really am glad you're doing this kind of thing, because I find that if somebody doesn't think through what the goal is they're trying to achieve, it's much harder for them to discipline themselves to save money every pay period and every month to reach a point of financial security down the road. Andy's with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hello, Andy. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you, Clark?
Great. Thank you, Andy. How can I serve you?
Yes, we have, our family is looking to travel to the Cancun area, more specifically the Playa Mujeres, next January. And we were wondering when the best time is to purchase flights and resort accommodations.
So first, it makes you a genius wanting to go in January instead of February or March to a fun in the sun spot.
Okay.
You know why that makes you a genius?
From you in the past, actually.
You knew that, huh? Okay. Yeah, because January, even though it's in the window of the peak season, January usually is the bargain time of the peak season because people have tapped themselves out of vacation time and money from the whole Thanksgiving to Christmas, New Year's time period. So January is kind of like a lull for ski trips and for fun in the sun. So as to when I'd look to buy, I want to bring up something now that I hate to bring up, but I have to.
Okay.
You need to make sure that nobody in your group is a skittish traveler because the State Department has been issuing warnings about Cancun and the Yucatan Peninsula, that if you have people in your group that are nervous travelers, they may not be particularly gung-ho about going to the Yucatan.
Okay, I have heard a little bit about that.
So I think you need to talk through with people who'd be going because the reality is if you book a resort and you buy air travel or you buy a package, you're not going to be able to, based on, let's say, a highly publicized crime or whatever, or a new warning from the State Department, to be able to say, too hot to handle, we can't do this. You're going to lose your money.
Okay.
So that's why I would really, I always hate to talk about that with the destination, but it's a reality because I get calls from people when there will be a murder in the news or something like that, where they're booked to a place and they'll call me and they want out or they want reassurance or whatever. And I always feel bad for them because the whole idea of going on a vacation like this is to have fun and to escape the world, right?
It sure is.
And if you're worried about it, then it takes a lot of the joy away, and particularly the joy in advance of anticipation. So what I recommend is that you look at buying travel to Cancun only on Southwest Airlines, since they charge no penalty for change or cancellation. And so if people freaked out and wanted out, you know you don't lose a penny of what you paid for tickets. And then for the stay, that instead of booking a traditional package, that you book a property where there's a cancellation period that is reasonable, where you up to maybe a few weeks before arrival would be able to cancel free of penalty. As far as when you should be looking to buy, likely for January, you want to look around September after Labor Day.
Okay.
Is going to be, which is the question you originally asked, and then I took you on this huge tangent.
And I appreciate all that detailed information.
But September, October, that's right in the window when you're going to see more offers. And because January is kind of like a lull in the travel season, you're not going to find that things are just going to be booked solid. And so you're okay to wait till there are better deals, and the fall is when they're going to appear. Today's Clarkrageous moment is a clear example of why I always tell you be very careful what information you ever give any entity. You'll hear me often say when you go to a doctor's office or a medical provider or a hospital, never, 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 not ever, give them your Social Security number. Be careful with whatever information you fill out on a form. Just because there's a question asked doesn't mean you should answer it. Only what's absolutely necessary. Here's a perfect example in today's Clarkrageous moment.
Scams, ripoffs, outrages. It's a Clarkrageous moment.
Talk about an organization that absolutely does not value your privacy. Facebook, for years, it's now come out, stored hundreds of millions of its users' passwords in a format that was available to any of its employees who could then go on to your account and see whatever they wanted. Now, Facebook says they're going to notify hundreds of millions of users of Instagram and Facebook, and we'll see what they actually say in those notices. But I just want you to know that's why the notice is being sent, because they took no precautions to protect your very sensitive password information whatsoever. And then the FEMA folks, imagine you've been through a terrible disaster, your life's been turned upside down, and now FEMA has released extremely private information, including your bank account information, to a unrelated private contractor on 2.3 million families who have applied for disaster relief from FEMA. FEMA, even after this has come out, based on an inspector general report, defiantly says they're not going to notify anybody of this breach of your private information. It's got pretty much everything, your addresses, your zip codes, everything they had on you has been carelessly released to an outside contractor who had no need for that information, and they don't know if anything untoward has happened with it, but FEMA has decided to keep it a big fat secret from you, and that is Clarkrageous. Great to have you here on the Clark Howard Show, where it's all about you and that wallet of yours. I want you to learn ideas from me so you can keep more of what you make. So, do you buy organics? My wife buys a lot of organics for our household, but organics still remain a tiny part of the overall purchases that people make in grocery stores. Somewhere 5-6% of purchases are made of organic items. The good news is that the additional cost of buying organics has collapsed. Used to be that organics were hugely more expensive, commonly 50% more than buying a non-organic item. Now, because there are so many producers and brands competing in the organic space, the additional cost, according to the most recent data I've seen, is about 7% more on average to buy organics than to buy non-organic food items. So if you are into buying organics, know that the additional money that will come out of your wallet is significantly smaller. But there's a lot of controversy in what is called organic, because most of what goes on is voluntary labeling by private organizations. And typically, the standard that you look for is USDA certified organic. That means the U.S. Department of Agriculture is willing to say that it is certified organic. There's a lot of pushback against some of the labeling that takes place from different organizations. And so it becomes hard to know if you can really trust the organic label that is on the item. And that's why there are more players in organic trying to establish their brand name as a recognized and trusted brand name that you can buy that says the food items are organic. On the question of cost, there was just a survey I read a few days ago that compared Whole Foods, Trader Joe's, and Aldi on organics. And what they found in the survey was that Aldi was by far the cheapest place to buy your organics, but that the selection was much more limited than it was at Trader Joe's or at Whole Foods. But Whole Foods was massively more expensive item to item compared to Aldi on buying organics. And Aldi originally was not a big player in organics, keeps adding a greater number of them. And so if you are looking to buy organics, you're not going to find the selection that you'll find at Aldi's corporate sibling, Trader Joe's. You won't find as cheap a price as at the corporate sibling, Trader Joe's. But in either case, you'll pay a lot less than you will buying organics at Whole Foods, because then you're not talking about 7% more. You're paying a huge amount more buying organics at Whole Foods. Laura is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hello, Laura.
Hi, Clark. How are you?
Great. Thank you, Laura. And it's great to hear you so positive and upbeat, because you just got some terrible news. Share with me.
I did. Well, first, I have to say, I am a longtime listener. I've been listening to you for so many years, and I love your advice. So I'm thrilled to be talking with you.
Well, thank you.
Yes, but I was laid off from my job after almost a little over 18 years with the company.
18 years.
Yes, 18 years. Actually, a little longer, because I had left for a year and a half and come back after being there 4 years. So probably 20 plus years, actually. But anyway.
Did they treat you well with severance or not really?
They did. I feel like this is a wonderful company here in Kansas City, and they were very generous and, you know, above and beyond, giving me resources to help me maybe find another job and things like that. So very generous. So I did get a severance package. So that's, my question is twofold. So I have all of this 401k that's with the retirement company that this company uses. And so I'm wondering what to do with that. What should I roll that into? I'm just so nervous about managing this big chunk of money.
So in the meantime, you have a full legal right to just leave that 401k where it is. And I would recommend that for now. You have enough disruption in your life right now without worrying with the 401k. And are you planning to work somewhere else? Is that your goal?
Well, I am a graphic designer, and I am thinking I might try the freelance route for a while and see how that goes before I go back full time. I am married, and my husband works, but he travels a lot, and we still have kids in school. Just thinking about work-life balance, that maybe I'd try the freelance route. So then I would have to think about, okay, how do I contribute to a 401k or an IRA now in that capacity?
Well, that's easy. We can deal with that. So with what you've added to this, I would leave the money as it is with the 401k plan you've got at the employer. And they probably advised you that you had the right to do that.
Yes.
Yeah. So I would leave it behind. You have it well diversified in the plan?
I do.
So I would just leave it. You can't add to it anymore. But if the plan has done well for you over the years and you've been able to build up a nest egg, just leave that as it is. And you know, if you decide to go back to work for another company instead of working for yourself, and they have a 401k, there'll be a point at which you can move the money over. And that would be the easiest time. If you decide only that you learn that you love freelancing, you want to stay on your own, then maybe down the road we could talk about you moving the money to your own IRA, but not a priority now.
Okay, that's good to know.
Now, on the question of what you can do, if you find you really establish yourself working independently, you have wonderful options available to you on how you would save in the future. You can do something known as a SEP, a Simplified Employee Pension. If you would be your only employee, you can do what's known as a self-employed 401k or solo 401k that's very easy to set up and has a lot of flexibility to it. So that's really a conversation down the road if you find that you've built up a sustainable business that you're running yourself.
Okay, that sounds good. And then in regards to the severance package, so I have this money, and since I am kind of taking some time to get established, you know, with my new freelance work, I'll need some of it to live off of. But I think a chunk of it, I'm just going to keep in savings. And so I'm looking at some of, you know, the online CD rates, which look pretty healthy, like for a year. And would that be a smart thing to do with a chunk of money if I know I can spare it for a year?
Yes, that's fine to do. In fact, I'd say with an online bank that you choose to put money in a CD, you might find you split it 50-50, that you put half of it in their online savings account and the other half in a CD. If the CD is paying roughly a quarter point to a half a point more than what you can earn just in their straight savings account. The savings accounts right now are paying low twos to right around 2.5%. And some of the CDs are paying upper twos. So,
yep, that's what I was seeing. I kind of went to your list that you had of some of the online banks, and those are the numbers that I was seeing.
So I think a 50-50 solution would be good because you don't know. There may be a need for you to have some cash. Let's say you decide in your business you need to buy some equipment. If the money is tied up all in a CD, you don't have that available cash to buy the equipment you might need. Or if you need a new graphics-oriented computer, you might need some funds. So that's why I wouldn't go. The spread on interest rates is not high enough between the one-year savings account, or CD, I'm sorry, and a savings account to make it worth putting it all in the CD.
Okay. That sounds good.
And this sounds like you have such a positive attitude. It sounds like for you, this has created an opportunity for you.
It has, yes. I've been kind of looking to do something different and maybe something on my own after so many years of working in the corporate environment. So, yeah, it was a kind of a mixed blessing. You know, sad to leave the company that I really liked, but looking forward to the opportunities.
Well, that is great. And I wish you much success, Laura. AJ's with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hello, AJ.
Hey, Clark, how are you?
Great, thank you. You're trying to help out a relative. Tell me what's up.
I am. Thanks for taking my call. So she's a young relative in her early 20s. She has a young child, and she has a pretty poor credit score. She's used like payday lenders and some other kind of predatory stuff. And I keep telling her, I'm like, please call me whenever you need anything. Don't go to them. And she's starting to do that more and more. And so I was thinking about ways of kind of helping her build up her credit score. And I was thinking about adding her as an authorized user. And I heard you the other week telling someone not to do that with strangers, but it might be good to do that with family or sometimes friends. So I just wanted to hear more about what you think about that. And also, if not that, what are some other options?
No, that is a very viable option. You just don't give her the plastic.
Okay.
So you add her as an authorized user, and depending on who the issuer is, they will or will not report. You want her social security number.
Okay.
Because they'll only be able to report her. They need the social security number so they can then report that she's an authorized user status on credit reports. But I want to step back a second. You said she was doing payday loans and all that. Does she have some defaulted debts and collections that are on her credit?
I don't believe so. We live in different parts of the country, so I don't physically see her often, just every couple of years. But I've been talking, you know, trying to help her out for the past couple, maybe 2 years now, 3 years. And I think she's done with all of that, but I am not exactly sure.
Okay. So here's what I would give her as an assignment. You have probably heard me talk about Credit Sesame and Credit Karma.
Mm-hmm, yep.
I want her to set up dashboards with both of them.
Okay.
And say you want to help her get back on her feet with her credit reputation, but you need her to manage it and see what things are holding her back, what are the things she needs to deal with. And with both Credit Sesame and Credit Karma, she'll be able to see what's going on with her credit, where her scores are in relative terms, and see what she needs to do, and they'll tutor her on what she needs to do to improve things. And if you do add her as an authorized user, she'll be able to see if the issuer is reporting that and it showing up on her Credit Karma and Credit Sesame. It's free for her to set those up, but the real benefit is they both nudge you in ways to improve your standing and get you thinking about what's involved in having good credit. What makes that up? What are the changes you need to make? Because if she's had a bad history with credit, she needs to educate herself and motivate herself to handle it better. And otherwise, you giving her authorized user status is really just a Band-Aid on it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So
if she does all that... Oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, so with one of, which one of my credit cards should I choose if we get to that point? Like, because I have some that have been open for like 7 or 8 years. That's my longest, I think. And then my, or I have some that have larger credit limits. Should I do ones I use more? Or like, what should I be considering when I think about which credit card to use?
I don't think it matters particularly, except at the margins, as long as it's a major, a Visa, MasterCard, American Express, or Discover.
Gotcha. Okay.
Any of those will work fine.
Perfect. Well, thank you. This is really helpful.
And it's really kind of you to do this for her. And I hope she takes in the spirit intended and is able to improve her financial standing because of what you're so kindly doing for her.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Hey, listeners, whether you love true crime or comedies, celebrity interviews, news, or even motivational speakers, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue, right? And guess what? Now you can call the shots on your auto insurance, too. Enter the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. The Name Your Price tool puts you in charge of your auto insurance by working just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance. Then they'll show you a variety of coverages that fit within your budget, giving you options. Now, that's something you'll want to press play on. It's easy to start a quote, and you'll be able to choose the best option for you fast. It's just one of the many ways you can save with Progressive Insurance. Quote today at progressive.com to try the Name Your Price tool for yourself and join over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Jeff joins us on the Clark Howard Show. And Jeff, I understand from Kim, who talked to you, that you are somebody who I'm going to be very impressed with, that you actually are methodically trying to figure out the right way to spend your money on stuff you need to buy for your home. Is that true?
That's correct. Thank you for taking my call, Clark.
Certainly. What process are you going through? What are you trying to buy for your home?
So we're going to be building a new house, and we're obviously we'll be putting brand new appliances in the house. So what I've done is I've gone through the Consumer Reports buying guide and then the different monthly issues and looked at the different pricing and the different ratings for the appliances. And I've noticed that one appliance, let's say for a dishwasher, may get top ratings, but that same brand for a washer and dryer or a stove may get a poor rating. So I know that you can get some discounts if you bundle and buy all of one brand, but I really don't want to do that because I want the more reliable products.
So I'm with you. I'm with you completely. In fact, we have something that horrifies people. I don't know why, but we have one brand of washer and we have a different brand of dryer. And I don't know why that freaks people out. But, you know, the dryer of a particular brand was rated higher than the washer of a particular brand.
Well, what I want to do is find out maybe the best time to get the best deal. So whether it's Labor Day or Memorial Day or what kind of sales or.
So what I would do, you've got the luxury of time as you're going through the process of building. And what I would do is if you have alerts coming from Home Depot and Lowe's, or you don't yet set them up where they notify you of their sales, and just try to watch patterns on the sales. And there's a lot of disagreement about when the best time is to buy appliances, but I find that if you follow sale patterns or if you are willing to buy scratch and dent, I don't know if you live in a market in the country that has that, the chain that's from the Midwest, I think, Appliance Smart?
We don't have that.
All right. There are these companies around the country that specialize in scratch and dents and returns and things like that. But if you will just follow, as Home Depot and Lowe's, with the decline of Sears, Home Depot and Lowe's have become so important in the appliance space, to track their patterns of sales and what the price points are, whether you choose to buy from a local appliance store or you choose to buy from one of the giants, you'll be able to have a better sense of what's a good price and when it's a buying opportunity to buy one.
Now, what about possibly going to like Best Buy, because they'll match any price and it seems like they have the best selection.
That's just fine with me.
Okay.
I mean, you know, wherever works for you, and a Best Buy is where you feel the most comfortable buying, buy there. But it just may not be as easy to follow the price patterns with Best Buy as it would be with Home Depot and Lowe's. So use them as your marker point. You're listening to The Clark Howard Show. Thanks for joining us today. The Clark Howard Show is produced by Kim Drobes, Joel Larsgaard, Deborah Reese, and Jim Ayers. And remember, 24 hours a day, we're there to serve you at Clark.com and ClarkDeals.com.